You're listening to episode 28 of the podcast. Welcome back, guys. Thank you for tuning in again. I really appreciate it. Now, look, before we jump into this week's episode, I just want to say I have so much respect for any artists that are listening to this episode right now. And that is because artists are so underappreciated in general and within their own industry. Lots of people have their own unique vision and are doing so well, but just can't seem to bring in any sales or get any commissions. And trust me, guys, I see you out there. I see so many artists that deserve a lot more than what they actually get because they are putting everything into their work. They put their heart and their soul into every piece of work that they make, and for some reason things just aren't panning out. So I have so much sympathy and respect for artists out there that are really trying to push to build their art career. So in this episode, I thought I would introduce a YouTuber who is also an artist who makes a phenomenal amount of money and has a huge amount of success in the art community. And I think she's just going to be an absolute wonderful piece of inspiration for anybody that doesn't know her. It's going to be a great episode. You're going to learn all about how she became successful, all about how she grew a YouTube channel, all that and more, guys, coming right up.
You are listening to the Content Experience Podcast, the podcast for those wanting to learn more about all aspects of content creation and streaming. Each week we sit down with some of your favourite streamers to get to know the story behind the stream and what advice they would give to help build your dream career in content creation. All this with your host, taco lover, sci-fi geek and award-winning tap dancer, the Mike James.
Go ahead and introduce yourself, mysterious guest though.
Hello guys, I'm Catherine, owner of Catnip Illustration, and also Mike's boss. And yeah, I draw cute stuff that hopefully makes people smile. That's what I do for a living, and I also have a YouTube channel, which is kind of like my side thing. That kind of goes hand in hand, but it's kind of more of a side thing, and my Etsy business is my main jam, basically.
The main jam on the toast. But yeah, she is actually my proper one day a week boss. And she is a great boss and a fantastic boss. But the tables are turned this week because now I am the boss and I am the one that's going to be asking the questions. And, well, I'm not going to be telling you to do anything. At least I don't think. I'm not going to get you to dance like a monkey or anything. Although I could do.
You're not doing it.
So yeah, why don't we start off like we usually do? Why don't you go ahead and talk about your sort of journey with content creation, we like to call it, basically like YouTube and things. Like, take us back before you started Catnip and things. How did you get into that?
How did I get into Catnip, like the YouTube side, do you mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
How did I get into it and that? Well, basically, I used to watch loads of YouTubers in general for inspiration. I used to watch Fran Nerd, Lee Alexen, Holly Exley, who else? Just so many, and Sarah Faber, who's now friends, which is so, so strange to me. And I used to just watch inspiration when I was at home, on my breaks when I used to work at Martin Windows, my other job. And I used to just feel so inspired about their journeys because these were other artists, female artists, going out there and making like a career doing what they love by trying to build an online social presence and like carve the way into a little corner of the internet and like kind of get an audience and stuff. So I was kind of inspired by them, and I'd already built up my Etsy store at this point. It didn't have tons and tons of like sales or anything, but it had enough for me to then eventually drop down to part-time hours. And I just thought it'd be fun to bring out a YouTube video and try and document my journey and see how far Catnip come by just putting out videos. It was totally a hobby because I turned my hobby into a career, which was illustration and product making. So once that started to become my career, I needed another creative outlet and a creative hobby. So then I turned to YouTube, the filmmaking, the side I've always been really interested in, and it was another creative outlet for me. And it also helped with marketing catnip, but that's not initially how it started out. I started out with some travel vlogs to Glasgow. I filmed everything on my iPhone when I started, and I filmed me moving into my new studio. And I didn't really have many followers at this point. I was primarily focusing on Instagram and growing my Instagram social media. I did a lot of research about growing on Instagram, networking, stuff like that. Managed to get it up to around 10,000 followers on Instagram. And that's when I sort of seen my YouTube gain some sort of traction, because I could use the swipe up feature. So I could like say, oh, I've posted a new video, swipe up to watch. And at this point, I think I only had around 6 or 7 videos on my channel. They weren't that great, and I invested in a Canon G7X because I heard that's what all the YouTubers and vloggers used, and I was like, oh my gosh, I totally want one. The picture looks amazing. And I think the first few vlogs of that was me going to London with Rosie from Rose Watson, who I met online, and it was so fun. It was a big blogging event in London. I vlogged that, and then what really took off is my studio vlog number one. A lot of people found me from that. I don't know what, I think a little bit of luck was included here. And I ended up being on YouTube's Creator on the Rise. So I was on the YouTube main page, and I just got like, I think it was 20,000 subscribers in a month at one point. And I was like, what is going on? It's very much calmed down now since that happened. That was back in September 2018. Not that I'm counting or anything, but but it just kind of built from there, and that really gave me a platform. But at that point, I already built up my socials on, say, like Instagram and stuff, so I think that swipe up function helped YouTube recognize that people watching my videos were interested. I had a long audience retention on the video, so whether that helped, I don't know, but it was my studio vlog number one. And then it kind of just went from there, kept going. And I really, really enjoyed doing YouTube. Actually, opened my own personal channel a couple of months back in December. Well, not even a couple of months, like a month ago in December. And I've just kind of been really enjoying it. There's something so satisfying about filming beautiful scenes and everything, and then putting them all together to create like a story, and then adding music and like a really nice atmosphere. There's something really satisfying about it. I personally love editing. I don't know about anyone else, but editing for me is so relaxing and enjoyable, and I can't imagine me not doing it now. It's such a great hobby to have, I personally think, because you kind of get to be a photographer, a filmmaker, and yeah, it's just really, really fun. So yeah, that's how I did it.
It is an incredible journey. I want to also talk about the very beginning of the journey, because like growing online wasn't your initial push, was it, when you first got into it? You're attending events and things, obviously being quite closely related to you. Obviously, I already know quite a lot of your journey anyway, but obviously I want to share that part. Why was going to like events and things so important for your business and your brand in the beginning?
So I think networking events are really, really important, because you actually get friends in the industry. And also, I don't know if anyone's heard this, but I was the average of the 5 people you surround yourself by. So if you surround yourself by other creative entrepreneurs successful and other artists who are successful, and you see these women who are going out there and pushing themselves and going out the comfort zone, you will then be inspired by them because they're showing you that it's worth it. I always mention Lindsay from Nutmeg and Aloe. For those of you who have come over to this stream who are used to my channel, you were listening. I was actually at Nutmeg and Aloe's office like last week, and it was on my studio vlog, and she helped me out much. And I actually purchased, I was a fan and a customer of her, and she purchased one of my products. I purchased one of her products, and she actually reached out to me, and she was like, oh, you're actually from Teesside. That sounds like a Teesside accent, because I was posting on my Instagram stories, and we got chatting and everything. And she ended up coming around my studio, which was my second small bedroom in my house at the time. And she was so inspiring because she was a full-time creative entrepreneur. She was selling all the stuff. She doesn't have a YouTube. She just did it through like Instagram marketing and stuff like that. an Etsy SEO, and she was just so inspiring to me. And to have someone so local, because I assumed she was from London, as I assumed a lot of people who were successful were, I don't know why, or from a city with a lot of resources, because that's kind of what I got taught when I was at university, that you needed to a big city or a place with lots of resources, whereas the internet's so fast now and you're connected with people all across the planet. You really don't need to be in a city to get experiences like that. So having that networking and going to networking meetings, through Lindsay, I met Rosie, who had Rosebun Casson, who I went to London with on this networking event. So everything kind of happens for a reason. Grow genuine friendships. The word networking is a bit gross because people go to networking events for business deals. But for me, I went for friends, and you know, I really genuinely wanted to be friends. We don't just talk about work, we talk about what we ate that day or what foods or what we enjoyed that week, what we're sad about. And then it's all understood my business as well, because I didn't have any in real life friends into really anime or into art or illustration, or had their own business in art or illustration. Now I have two close friends who have a fashion business, Liel, who are down from me, but that networking was crucial for me because I got to see people who were really out there already making a full-time wage for themselves, and it was very, very inspiring to me. And it also connected me with a lot of amazing entrepreneurs and people in general, so that was so important. And I would recommend that to anyone really, to go to networking events. I will still do it. I haven't done it really last year. I went to a business course where we had to network, but it wasn't really in my field, so I didn't really keep in touch with many of them. But you just never know who you're going to meet and how your friendships grow and how it can actually become really beneficial later down the line. But I would always advise someone to not go into a networking event with an agenda like that, because then you seem inauthentic and then you kind of seem like you just want something out of them and to give it back. But try and foster a genuine friendship and connection if you are genuinely interested in that person, that business.
What about like setting up stalls and things as well? Because obviously you don't do that anymore, but I know that you did that at the beginning. How important is it to get out there and sell things to like your local community in order to build up that initial platform?
Oh, I thought that was amazing. I have like doing craft fairs and stuff. I used to only make any fair. I'd be very lucky to make my table money back, but I had so much fun. It was like setting up shop. I can't, you know, it's really weird. I kind of felt like I was playing shop, like pretending I was sat behind my booth, like with all my surroundings. But I learned a lot, and doing those craft fairs prepared me for comic conventions. It's so strange because everything kind of happened for a reason. If I went to a comic convention without going to a craft fair first, I would have been annihilated. I would have had a fresh new butthole ripped for me, honestly, because I would not have been prepared whatsoever.
You would have become the front cover of your thank you card.
Yeah, exactly. My raspberry butthole. It would have been absolutely disastrous. And having craft fairs and attending Comic-Con as well, that kind of gave me a perspective, because I've been attending Comic-Cons way before I even thought about having catnip. But honestly, the craft fairs taught me a lot, like bring extra bags for rubbish, make sure you bring change, a kitty, make sure you have enough pounds in the kitty. And this all came from a bad experience I had during craft fairs I learned from. But luckily, those craft fairs were nice and quiet, and I could learn without too much damage. Whereas if I went to a big convention like SunnyCon and made those mistakes, it would have been a lot more disastrous for me. In my mental state than it was. So going to craft fairs and things, really super helpful. They were a great learning curve. I would recommend it. Get yourself out there. It gives you a little bit of confidence as well. When people are looking at your items, they enjoy it. You do get the odd people look at your items, it's worth it. I've definitely had that. But you're learning from it, and you learn from the... Yeah, it's really good to push yourself out of your comfort zone, but sometimes I used to feel really exhausted after being at a craft fair, but I would like to get into conventions again in 2021. That is my goal. I would like to do a round of the UK, and eventually it would be really cool to do like a European convention. I would really like to do that. So, yeah, that would be really cool to do in the future.
So
yeah.
We will be moving on in just a second, but obviously going out to craft fairs and things, like, would you say that helped you from, if we flip the table and think about building an audience from, you know, a brand perspective and things, how did you use the craft fairs to push it to grow in like Facebook and Instagram? Did you promote it? Did you hand out business cards? Like, did it help you grow your social media presence as well?
I don't know if it helped me grow my social media presence, only because I don't think I was going to the right craft. As you know, our town didn't really have big events. If I did it to the big event that was Thrift, you know, the Festival of Thrift, we have this, mm-hmm. for those who don't know, we have a festival called the Festival of Thrift, and it's really big in our local area. Thousands of people go. It's got a very heavy, what we call footfall, which basically just means crowd level, and people will walk past your stall. But I went to smaller craft fairs, and I actually drove out about an hour to Durham craft fairs, and they just weren't that busy. So I wouldn't say in terms of social media they helped, but I did get a few followers from it who then purchased on my online store, and it was certainly helpful. I always get leaflets, and those leaflets would have all my social media details, but classic Catherine not being able to spell properly. It's an actual running joke in my community. I spelt my own email address wrong on the leaflets. I didn't double proof it and double check it. So every time I handed out a leaflet, I had to explain that, oh, this email address isn't right. I'm so sorry. So don't make that mistake. I don't think it grew it that much because I didn't go to great craft fairs. However, conventions was a different story for me because conventions were my niche. It was more recognizable. Kawaii characters were a lot more recognizable. People with my own stamp on it, whereas conventions, it was craft fairs was a little bit of a different audience, and I felt like I found my audience in conventions, and I definitely had followers who then have still become my followers now and even watch my YouTube channel who met me at SunnyCon. So yeah, that helped conventions. It's just finding what works for you. If you sell, say, crochet animals or something, you might be huge on the craft fair scene and farmers market scene and get a really great following. It all depends on your business and what it is you do. You could be an illustrator, but you could dabble in, say, beautiful countryside watercolors, in which case farmers markets would be the perfect place for you to exhibit your work and sell your work to people. So yeah, for me, craft fairs didn't work that great, but conventions did, and definitely helped me gain a few followers.
So yeah, that's good. Let's go forward in time a little bit. You've started building Catnip as a brand. You've got Instagram. You've started YouTube. What was your game plan for growing the social media side of things? We're going to talk about your branding and stuff in a minute, but I just want to sort of help anybody that might be thinking, you know, oh, I really want to grow my Instagram or grow my Etsy store or, you know, grow my Facebook or whatever it is. I just want to know what your game plan was during that middle period where you were, I mean, obviously you're still growing now, but, you know, when you started to grow across all platforms, what was your game plan and, you know, how did you go forward in growing each separate platform?
So for me, it was always goals. So I would, so I'd be like, my first follower count was, I really want to hit how do I do that? And then I would do a lot of YouTube tutorials. I would consume a lot of content about how to grow my Instagram. At this time, I was working full-time doing social media marketing, graphic design and reception work at the small business Martin Windows, as many people know. I did a lot of graphic design stuff, so I was running the Facebook page. So I actually taught myself a lot about Facebook marketing. And when I first started out, Facebook was my initial hub of where I was getting my commissions from. I used to sell people PayPal. I used to send people PayPal invoices, commissions and stuff. And I would kind of advertise to family and friends on Facebook, I'd open the page. And then I realized I was starting to enjoy Instagram more. I was kind of a late Instagram follower. Dean's literally saying in the comments, spent hours networking on Insta. And I mean, I was, yeah, that's so true. Thanks, Dean. I didn't even realize you were on the stream. I love you. Anyway, he's upstairs right now. It's very strange. But anyway, yeah, like Dean said, I then found out how to grow my followers on Instagram, because I switched over to Instagram very late, kind of late to the game. On Instagram, I was on Facebook, but then I switched. And because it was a visual platform, I was like, why didn't I think about this first? This is like, as an illustrator, this is a perfect platform for me because I could showcase my work visually. And then I literally, like Dean said, I spent hours and hours and hours commenting, engaging, building friendships online, liking, sharing posts, making posts, searching for the best hashtags, and just doing all the generic stuff that it takes to grow on Instagram. I would spend hours and hours and hours just commenting and really building connection, not just commenting on everything, because you can get a shadow ban now for that, but commenting really if I really genuinely liked it, following people, chatting to people. And that's how I got to know, like I say, Lindsay from Nutmeg and Aloe. I think she followed me when I had maybe 1,000 followers, and our friendship really grew into a true friendship. We're actually meeting for coffee again, and it was genuine connections and networking with people. And it was quite hard at first, because what I used to do, because I had a full-time job for a year while I was doing this, before I dropped down to part-time, and on my breaks, I didn't get a break really. I used to dedicate it to growing catnip on social media. So at 10 p.m. I used to get my break. So 10 p.m. was a 15-minute break, which meant I'll upload my first post on Instagram. I will then comment on 10 of my friends' channels or messages. And then on my lunch break, I would post to Facebook and Instagram again. So I'd post twice a day and I'd do more networking. That's what I did for a year on my breaks at work. So yeah, that's how I started. That was my game plan. It was just moving the goalposts as I went along and learning. And then I went to YouTube.
So basically, just to sum that up, it was just setting goals and just building genuine connections. I mean, you sort of use the exact same advice when it comes to Twitch and things, you know, go and meet other streamers, but don't meet them in hopes of just gaining something from them. Go and meet them in, you know, in terms of trying to build a friendship with them. So I want to move on, because I want to talk about the catnip brand. And obviously the catnip brand is everything. It's your personality, it's the visuals, it's the sounds, which, you know, hello, goodbye. I'm sure everybody from catnip will appreciate that very terrible I love you goodbye attempt. So obviously your brand covers everything. Now, somebody mentioned something a little bit earlier on that I wanted in the Twitch chat that I kind of wanted to talk about, because I think you finding your brand in terms of your appearance on videos and things was, I always like to bring it up, because obviously this was the time where obviously you were like at my mum and dad's and we would be talking, and then I remember the one video that you made where you were going to a stall and you turned on your camera and you were just so static talking to your camera, and I was like, you need to let your personality shine. So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about the personality behind catnip. I mean, I know it's you essentially, but why don't you go ahead and tell us how your personality helped catnip?
At first I was a little bit on YouTube, like you say, I was, because I'm a bit strange child voice. Now I've just learned to accept myself that is what I am, so you're gonna love it, are you? But I was very much aware that it's my brand, so I was trying to be kind of professional, and then I realized that my brand is not professional, and I started to add my own style and become a little bit more confident with me as a person. So I just started projectile vomiting what was going on in my brain on the paper and sharing it. So I just basically wanted to share like, I don't take life too seriously. I like to laugh. I find cute things funny and daft things funny. So I just wanted to make people smile with cute illustrations. I also like drawing women and beautiful illustrations, men, even though I'm drawing about that, that's another topic entirely. And I just literally enjoyed, yeah, putting a smile on other people's face, even if it's just one of those little grins that you get when you see something. And I just wanted that to transpire through catnip. I put so much of my personality into catnip that it's actually hard to distinguish what is my brand and what is me now. I'm like, am I my brand? I don't even know what's going on. But it's just everything that I've loved and accumulated through years and years of anime consumption, gaming, pixel dolls, Habbo Hotel, Neopets, all these different types of things when I was growing up as a kid. And it was kind of just a blend of everything that I loved and that I wanted to connect with other women on that, on, or other men. So that sounds so bad, but other men or women, but 95% of my audience base is actually women. And yeah, I just wanted to connect with other people like that. And I thought, I'm going to share what I love and see if anyone likes it back. And at first I was kind of emulating a style that wasn't mine. I was trying to find my way. I was doing a lot of bland pictures on Etsy. There was a lot of white background, very minimal, with a plant in the corner and then like the image. But then I started getting more and more colourful, more pastel tones. And then I kind of just thought, do you know what? I'm just going to totally be me, add what I want to it. And that's when I seen the biggest growth, when I was just fully myself. Like Butthole Berry, for example, it was so stupid and like so ridiculous. But I was so alive when I was doing it and excited, and I found it so daft and cute and funny that I just wanted to do it. And that's when the genuine, authentic connection with other people happens, when you're genuinely enjoying what you actually putting out there and you do it. So I think it's really important to have a passion, and it just so happens that my passion connected with my personality and hand in hand. And I do think it's helped catnip grow, because it's become more than just a brand. It's become kind of like a little community now of people who like the thing.
It's funny actually, because I know this podcast isn't about me, and I can talk about this a completely other time, but it is related to obviously your brand. But obviously when you took me on to come and work for you, I mean, apart from the fact that that you had like 89 different pieces of paper for each different product that you made, and about 16 printers, and about 100 products that I was just thrown into the deep end and said, here, package those and get on with it. And I was like, how do I paper? But I think one of the biggest things is your voice. Like the catnip voice is very cute, and it's a very apparent via the Twitch chat that it's cute and it's passionate and it's just so lively. And I think obviously being me and being Dean's brother, you know, the grumpy farewells that we used to get called in school, it was very difficult to sort of adapt into the catnip brand and, you know, talking in the way that you wanted me to. But obviously I've said to you before that I understand how important brand is across the board, and you try and uphold your brand on absolutely everything, don't you?
Yeah, I think it's really, really important, because I want everyone who supports the shop and say they're purchasing online and you're packaging, you're communicating with them, that brand voice is very important. They are a friend. They are part of our community. They're the marshmallows. They are what keep catnip alive. So they are the most important thing out there. Like, without them, I would be absolutely nothing. So the voice is very, very important to me, and that connection with the audience and the customers is super important, because they are like fellow marshmallows and people who are helping build catnip and grow the community. It's really amazing to see, because the community has kind of grew catnip themselves. Like, I feel like I've kind of done the back work of trying to get seen, but after I was seen, then it's actually the community who have kept things going and been given catnip its own brand voice and I can't take full credit because the community is super, super important. So if I ever employed anyone like you, it is very, very important to me that you treat the marshmallows in a certain way, and it's always friendly, it's always happy, and it's always upbeat, and there's a certain voice that you have to communicate with them with. Obviously, no one's going to like be able to emulate someone, but there's a certain brand voice that Katniss going to like I want it to have, kind of like Disney, like their customer service is absolutely good. I'm very inspired by the way they put their cast members, to call them, on 2-week intensive courses to train them up about the Disney voice and the Disney dream, and it's kind of a similar like concept. There's a certain voice and world that I want to create in Katniss, and I want to kind of replicate that where I can.
Yeah, that's
the great brother.
That's what I love.
Just laughing at the comment.
Yeah, I was trying to keep it in, but that's what I loved about you in terms of like, you know, the Katniss brand. Like where, like before I even got taken on, I used to love talking to you in general about anything content related, because you had a vision and you're so positive and so goal focused that, you know, when people like Gary Vee and other people sort of say, oh, you should surround yourself with positivity and that way it'll help breed a more positive environment. Like, I can definitely feel and understand that, because every time that I used to talk to you about YouTube and stuff, I used to come away from it like super pumped and ready, because obviously I took a long break, and I used to get super pumped to get back into YouTube. So it, like, surrounding yourself in positivity obviously definitely helps. Now, I am going to ask you a question, but I appreciate not everybody likes talking about this. So if you don't want to talk about it, just say I'm not going to be offended. But I do want to ask first, because obviously I didn't get the chance to ask before. But obviously, people that are listening to this podcast that might be thinking about starting up an Etsy store, like, how much were you making on Etsy alone, compared to when you first started to now? You don't have to give exact figures. If you don't want to talk about it, that's fine, because I know some people don't, and some people don't mind talking about it. But I just want to sort of put the comparison out there of, like, what somebody could achieve if they put their mind to it.
So basically, what my revenue figures are, that kind of.
Yeah. Like your revenue figures, basically, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a little hard. I've now got multiple income streams. YouTube ad revenue, which is diabolical, by the way. Don't believe anyone who says YouTubers get paid a fortune purely YouTube, because they do not. but because I've got a few different, like, avenues of revenue now, like affiliate linking and sponsorships, YouTube. But if we're talking about purely Etsy, which was my primary focus, and I actually moved into my office without YouTube and things like that, I started off on Etsy with zero sales for about 6 months. I made no sales. I must have had about 25 items up, but I was making money through commissions on PayPal. Now, I can't give you the exact figure now, because it's way back in 2015 when I started that. So it's quite a long time ago, then 2016. But it was like, maybe, I'll tell you what, I've got my phone here. I could tell you, couldn't I? Because I can get the stats up, I think. But I think the first year on Etsy, when I was part-time at Martin Windows, so I was making a part-time income, which was enough to pay the council tax and the food. I made sure I could pay my bills, because I still worked there freelance. I think I made about $5,000 in a year on Etsy, and grew my followers up. I was really happy with that personally, because I was enjoying it, and that made up like minimum wage, my $5,000, and then part-time at my other job, minimum wage, and I was super, super, super happy with that, because I was doing something that I loved part-time. And then I thought, wow, I would really love to make that into a full-time thing, which only really happened last year. I've been at it alone now on my own revenue for around a year this month. Or was it February? About a year I've been doing it on my own. This year, so it's hard because tax years work weird. So this was actually 2018, what I've just filed for my tax return, it was 33,000 pure profit. So my take-home pay after everything, after paying for you and Emily. So I think that's about the average UK wage, slightly above the average UK wage. And I am more than happy with that. I'm so happy because I'm doing something that I love. I don't think it's particularly lavish or anything, but I really don't care. I am very happy with having, you know, a comfortable lifestyle, doing something that I'm really passionate and I love. And that was super important to me.
My goal
was to be able to make minimum wage. So I was always in minimum wage jobs. My aim was always to make minimum wage doing what I love. And we managed to make that goal. So yay to us. In terms of actual revenue, I think it's 77,000 we actually made. But in terms of when you take everything off, that sounds like a great figure. And a lot of people are like, wow, £77,000. And I'm very proud of myself for that. But once you take off all the business expenses and the products, buying enamel pins, paying for Mike and Emily, paying for printers.
And me, because printers I'm break not down.
Yeah, exactly. The printers break down and things go wrong, and then you're investing in new products. I spend a lot of my time investing, and then you've got your tax and everything. By the time that's taken off, we managed to create 33,000, which wasn't bad going after 4 years of grafting. I was very, very proud of myself that we managed to do it. This year has started off to a little bit of a different start. We're actually down this year because I think what happened is when I went viral in 2018, it kind of boosted my sales, and now it's kind of settled and we've got our little community kind of plodding along. But I'm so happy content doing and sharing what I love and finding out new projects. And it never really was about, making loads and loads of money. It was always about being able to live a comfortable life, doing something that I absolutely love doing. And if that meant earning minimum wage, doing what I love, I was willing to do it. And I just wanted to work to that point. So.
I didn't ask that question to sort of, you know, flex on anybody or make anybody feel bad. I just, the purpose of it was, you know, some people that may listen to this that might be considering Etsy, it's just to sort of give people a little bit of hope, because obviously, like you said, for the first 6 months, there's people out, like, you didn't make any sales, so obviously there might be people out there right now that are in month one or month two or month four of that 6 month, or it might be longer. But obviously, it just goes to show that if you think about your brand in a professional manner and try and make connections and just build things up and just have an optimistic view and keep working and keep working, then eventually you can create this comfortable lifestyle for yourself. So that's kind of why I asked it, and why I like to, I don't ask everybody, but I like to ask people every now and then, just so people can kind of scope out what they can achieve. Because I know there is a lot of artists that will probably listen to this and hopefully listen to this and be, you know, driven by you and your story. And we can see by the Twitch chat you have a lot of people that are definitely inspired by your story and will probably come away from this super pumped and ready to make something, ready to up the game. And that's kind of the goal of the podcast. So let's move on and talk about the future, because obviously right now you've got like this comfortable living. And obviously, we sat down for a meeting about what you want to do in 2021. So I'm going to ask you the question, what is in the future for Catnip?
So for me, I just want to keep cultivating the audience that I've got. And I want to just explore different things. As my followers will have seen, I just short story on YouTube, totally out of the blue. I felt really, really inspired by something that actually went totally wrong. It was a character design that didn't work well, and I really didn't like how it turned out like a butthole. And then it got me thinking, actually raspberries do look like little buttholes at the top. So I just had a giggle to myself, and then I couldn't stop thinking. We went to see an anime at the cinema, and Dean, and it was called what was it called, Dean? I can't even remember now. Something with you, Weathering With You, that's called. And I couldn't stop thinking about this little raspberry character and imagining her in a like I said, the weekend I was relaxing and I got really inspired, so I got my iPad out and started drawing an 8-panel comic to this little raspberry character. And then I put it up on a short story, and I was just going to do the 2D normal comic, but then I thought, how can I bring it to life? Like, I'm not an animator. I don't have the time or resources to animate this, but how can I make it more alive? So then I added music, which is anywhere music, and a sound effect to kind of bring the characters to life a little bit more. And that was a little experiment. So it changes all the time, my goals for catnip, but I now want to introduce like a little mini series with Raspberry. And then I also want to just keep expanding my characters and eventually write children's books like further down the line. And who knows, maybe an animated series, an actual animated series would be freaking epic. That would be the end goal. If I could have anything and someone said, right, what do you really want? A cute animated series would be absolutely epic. I would love that. And then children's books or books in general, but mainly an animated series for adults, like Raspberry, the whole Raspberry.
Oh, so not CBB, not CBB season.
No. Berry was an adult one. So like it was targeted towards adults, like because they get stressed in life. There's a lot of anxiety and people mental health, so doing a little animated series that would make adults laugh and giggle and just take like 1 second out of the day just to give them a smile, that's kind of where I want to be at with catnip, and create more products that are cute and silly and fun and just put a little smile on people's face. That is my goal for catnip, and keep growing. I'd also like a bigger studio. That would also be good because we're getting we're running out of space, as you will.
Yeah, we are. No, it's just
when
you
a little tight.
When you said about a cartoon, I was sat there thinking, like in my head, I was sat there thinking, up next on CBBC's is The Adventures of Gingy and Spice. And then you were like, oh yeah, I want it to be an adult one. So I was like, oh. maybe Adult Swim or something like that.
No, I don't want it to be like that. Or like it's just like, I don't know, like, have you seen Negretsuko on Netflix? It's no. Very, very similar to that. That is targeted towards working class, like working people, not working class, but working people. And or just like adults in general. That's an animated show directed to adults. And obviously it's child friendly, so kids can watch it as well, which would be lovely. But it's usually directed towards an audience. That's probably where I would like kind of Berry to go. However, Gingy and Spice could become an absolutely fantastic children's character, and I would love an actual children's book based on Christmas. I've already got it down in my notes. I've got the name of the book and everything down in my notes. First sentence of the book is quite funny. We were talking about this ages ago. And those characters would be translate very well into children. But the Butthole Berry, I think, would be more of an adult story. I think not rude. It's not going to be rude or anything.
Is it
going to
be?
That. It's just going to be gaff.
Is it going to be a bit like Shrek? You know, where it's like for kids, but if you watch it as an adult, you pick up on like little innuendos that they put in there for adults that kids wouldn't quite catch. Like you know,
classic for children things to do. But no, it wouldn't be aimed at kids at all. It would be totally aimed at adults and not for kids really, but kids could watch it and not, you know, there wouldn't be any rude bits or anything. It's just to make someone smile as something fun. But if it was Gingy and Spice, that would be for kids, and there would always be some adult humor. Like Disney uses that a lot. Most animation like places use that a lot. Like they use adult humor in children films because a lot of adults watch animation, and yeah, I watch animation all the time. So
it's like, because it's what comes to mind. I know you've said no already, but what comes to mind is the Shrek scene with Donkey, where the look at Lord Farquaad's castle, and Shrek sort of leans over and he goes to Donkey, do you think he's compensating for something? Now, as a kid, that would just go straight over your head. But as an adult, is like, do you think the size of his castle is compensating for the size of, well, something else on his body?
Yeah, it's good. Disney, and like I say, most children's shows kind of use that comedy now, but no, the parents watch it alongside the kids. And for those people who don't have kids, a lot of adults watch animated shows. It's enjoyable and it's fun. I freaking love animated shows, to be honest, and I don't have children and I go to the cinema to watch them and everything. I told you, I'm a woman child.
So I want to go back quickly to talking about personal development and things, because obviously one thing that I've just sort of remembered that I really wanted to ask was, how do you go about learning a new skill or developing a new skill? Because obviously as a businesswoman, you didn't just open up your Etsy store one day and suddenly know how to do, you know, everything. So how do you go about learning new skills to help run your business?
Am I allowed an affiliate link share? You my link free. No, I'm joking. Online tutorials, online courses, online helps, YouTube videos. There's loads of free online help. Just literally getting your hands dirty and trying things out and learning for yourself. Products I make that weren't actually a thing, so it was kind of trial and error. So I used to make myself and get kind of had to be a bit creative with how I came up with it. And you just have to start. You have to start something, and then you learn along the way. So you'll Google something. We've got Google, which is literally the biggest frigging online learning platform ever. Type in something and learn it. And, you know, figure it out. There'll be videos on it. There'll be classes on it. There'll be tutorials written. If you're a visual learner, there's tons of online stuff. Obviously, platforms like Skillshare are really good too. And also going out and doing courses as well. So I'm not very good at business. I'm not very good at finance. So chatting to other people who are good at business and finance, going on business courses. I went on a business course that was free. I actually took my Patreons with me and we blogged it. And I went on two business courses and I'm going on another one very, very soon. So I'll take courses where I can and free education where I can. You just have to, yeah, educate yourself and also take opportunities up. Courses, if you're not sure, if you learn better in that education environment, then yeah, go to it and learn that way. But for business, for me, because I was lacking, it was to be around other business owners and we could kind of chat and you kind of think, oh, I'm actually not doing too bad, I'm winging this pretty well. So it wasn't that bad. So yeah, going on courses, networking, Google. Just Google, big highlight Google. Like, there's just so much YouTube, so many great. A lot of people ask me, I didn't take illustration for my degree, neither did I just practiced. I got a sketchbook out, paper, and I did tutorials, how to draw eyeballs, how to draw noses, draw feet, still bad at that, how to draw hands, still really bad at that. And you just practice makes perfect, and you have to just get started as well and begin your first step, and then it kind of all clicks into place. And enjoy the journey, because it's not an overnight thing. You're not going to suddenly have your style to catnip took ages to develop, and it's always changing as well. I'm always changing colors and experimenting and things like that. But yeah, what my advice would be.
I mean, it's fantastic advice. Because just learning things in general is something that we should all do. You know, reading books and listening to other people, and, you know, like you said, talking to other business owners. And I mean, you are just a great resource in itself for other people. So if there is any artists out there that, you know, I won't say to go and ask Catherine all of your questions, because she is only one person and she's not an encyclopedia of answering questions, but you can learn.
I wish I could help her.
What, you just turn into like Catnip V, a bit like Gary V, yeah. Where you just have videos of you going to conventions, just talking to people,
well,
helping them with business.
That's why I have a YouTube channel, to help other people. Because by watching other YouTubers, I want to give that back to the community as well. I got so much inspiration and help off other YouTubers and watching Fran Nerd and stuff, who made me believe it was to do it. And once you believe it, you start to do it. It's still very strange for me that people might see me that way. I still don't quite, I don't think I've got to grips with that idea yet. I still feel like a newbie and like a fangirl who corner of the internet, like, oh, watching YouTube videos. So it feels strange that people are getting inspiration off me, but it's also a very cool feeling to know that hopefully I'm giving back, because I've had so much off other people from YouTube and inspiration that hopefully I can give something back, and that's the whole point of my channel, and also to document it, and because I like editing videos, so yeah, that makes me feel really happy actually.
And one thing I think is great to stress is that all the way through this podcast, Catherine has finished almost every sentence with, because it makes me happy. And I think that's kind of the most important element. If you can take one thing away from this, is what I like to preach anyway, is as long as you come out the other end being happy and you're not, you know, screwing yourself over in the process, then you shouldn't stop for anybody. Nobody should really be able to tell you how to live your life. And I think that's one of the most important things that you could probably take away from this, and of course all the other bits that Catherine has spoken about. And the worst part is that I could sit here and talk to Catherine and break every little detail down to help other people as much as I possibly can, because that's what I like doing, that's why I make these podcasts. But unfortunately, Catherine doesn't want to do that, and we don't have 18 hours, because I would probably use up 18 hours talking about business and breaking everything down. So in a couple of minutes, we'll be finishing up the podcast. But before we do, I want to ask Catherine sort of what is the biggest bit of advice for any artists out there? So let me give you a quick scenario. There's an artist out there right now who's not made an Etsy sale yet, or they've only made a few. They're struggling and they don't know what to do. What is the biggest bit of advice that you could give to that person right now?
To not give up. If it's something that they really, really want, like I said, me and see, to keep experimenting. That is super important. Experimenting and really analysing yourself, and really good constructive criticism. My community knows I love me some constructive criticism. Now, you can take it or leave it as well. I always say you don't have to listen to constructive criticism if you're really happy with your work, and that's fine. But if something's going wrong, like you're not getting many sales, listen to other people, get advice, and think, how can I do better? Can I improve product photography? Do I need more listings? Consume education, like how to grow on Etsy, say, if you haven't had any sales. Grow things like that. How can I get more sales on Etsy? And if the list, it says you need more than 50 items in your store and you've only got two, well, you know what you need to work on. And if it says you need clearer photography, then you know what you need to work on. Photography is standard. And always analyze yourself and try and grow on everything. And yeah, you just have to not give up. And if it's something you're truly, truly passionate about, it's very, very hard to give up on anyway, to be honest. I always say to Dean, and Dean always laughs at me, I always say if we won the lottery, even though we won the lottery on, so it's impossible, but you know what I mean? Just because I say it. But if we won the lottery, give up catnip. I love the community too much. I love the people too much. And it, like I say, it's not about money for me. Obviously, there needs to be money made for me to keep doing it. That's why I love my Patreons so much. I know there's some Patreons of mine in this chat. Shout out to you all. I love you so much. They help me have a, you know, regular wage, feel more comfortable by putting out content and creating and spending time creating content, rather than, you know, worrying about products, worrying about sales. And that's why different income streams is really helpful. Don't try and do everything at once. You literally said give one piece of advice, and I'm like, not loading.
Hey, no, I'm not stopping you, because the more advice we can fit into this, the better. Because yeah, just carry on. I'm gonna go to bed. Yeah, I'll be back in a couple of hours. You carry on.
Yeah, I'll just keep talking. But yeah, don't try and do everything. One thinks, right, I need to have a Instagram, I need to have a successful YouTube, I also need to do Facebook, I also need to do my Etsy products, I also need to be good at photography. You just start one bit at a time. If you've got your product, now you need to learn how to photograph them nicely. You also need to learn to do SEO, so one step at a time. Remember, it's a marathon, not a sprint. Is that the right saying? Mm-hmm. It's a very slow process. You'll learn, and all these things will connect. I didn't go out. I think people measure success with people who have already been grafting for 5 years. Okay. I was not like this in the beginning. I literally had zero sales, like I say, on Etsy. My photography wasn't very good. I had to learn through YouTube videos. And slowly over time, I managed to build this stuff up. I had a following on Facebook. I used to do networking groups on Facebook and Instagram. I grew my Instagram and then over YouTube after about 2 years. It all came with time. Don't try and do everything at once. Otherwise, you're just going to burn yourself out and you're not going to, like, you're accomplishing everything because you try to spread yourself too thinly, which is what I do a lot, but let's not talk about that either.
Now,
that would probably be my advice. I really
want to get onto the questions from chat, but before we finish up, I do need to cover this because I completely forgot. I know, don't shoot the messenger. But Patreon, obviously we've spoken a lot about that today. And Patreon is like one of those things that every creator wants to make because it's the best way to get people over to Patreon and support your journey. But what's your advice with Patreon? Would you recommend somebody starting a Patreon like as soon as they can? Like, what's your advice with Patreon?
Yeah, I wouldn't advise that. I actually had no intentions of Patreon, if I'm being completely honest. I was doing my Etsy, I was doing my YouTube, and a lot of people reached out to me and Patreon, and I was like, oh no, I've got much on my, like, too much on my hands. I don't think I'd be able to dedicate the time. At this point, my YouTube had been doing quite well for around 6 months. I think I was on about episode 18 or something of the studio, or maybe episode 20 or something, and a few other videos between them. And I just kept getting messages off multiple people. And then I think I put a poll on, like, listen, guys, a lot of people keep messaging me about Patreon because I wanted to keep my community open to everyone. And I hope people always feel welcome if they can't give me monetary help. I never want to exclude anyone. And a lot of people say, if you get a Patreon, I know a lot of other writers then just dedicate the time to Patreon and not YouTube. But I didn't want to do that. By Patreon, I still wanted to dedicate time as I did to YouTube. However, Patreon does help me do that now, because now I'm not so worried about, you know, my Etsy figures, whereas before I was really worried and I used to sit for hours sorting out my SEO, my titles, tags. Now I don't have to worry about that as much. Keep creating content without that kind of fear in the background. But I would grow an audience base before switching over to Patreon, because Patreon's quite a lot of work. I have to dedicate a lot of my time on Patreon, and I do, and I absolutely love it. Personally, I love the connections I have with my patrons. I know everyone's name and personalities because it shines through when they comment in chat, in the Discord and stuff, even though I've been terrible on Discord this week because I forgot to turn my notifications back on after Christmas. But the community on Patreon is just absolutely insane. I'm so overwhelmed that these people support me and enjoy the content, and hopefully I can give these something back, like our live streams, to get calendars, get digital downloads and stuff. But it's not something that I would have ever seen as a career. It's meant to be a helping hand as a creator, if that makes sense. And yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't ever go out with the intentions of having a Patreon. Like, I'm going to create art, not a Patreon. Patreon is great, but you want to create art, connect with other people and to have fun and make money and then build up your audience and then move over to Patreon once you've kind of got a nice little audience base. I think that would be my advice. You don't have to have a huge audience, just, you know, someone who's willing to want to support you and your art.
Yeah, because obviously I have a Patreon. I'm not plugging it, by the way. This isn't a plug. I'm just saying I have a Patreon. And I've got like 4 people on it. And it's like one of those things where I always forget about it and it gets pushed to the back of, like, the pile of things to do, and then before I realize it, I haven't updated it for like 3 weeks and I just don't know what to do with it. So I definitely agree with you. I think Patreon is one of those things where you should already have a community elsewhere, and then you can sort of elevate some of the community members that want to. Nobody has to. You're not entitled to anything, but the people that want to elevate their support for you can do on that platform. So I definitely 100% agree with that. However, I think for at least part one, don't worry, I don't think we're going to be recording part two anytime soon, but I do want to say thank you, Catherine, for coming on. I know you want to get to bed soon, so hopefully you'll give us 10 more minutes just to answer questions, but thank you.
No problem. I'm buzzing now. I can stay on for ages. Another word about Patreon before. I'll make sure Patreon is one of my top priorities. Like, obviously my community and Etsy shoppers, but then Patreon is a very significant priority because those people are paying to support you and you make sure you have to give them content. Sometimes I'm a day or two late, but I definitely don't be 3 weeks late with for your Patreons. Definitely try and give your Patreons, like, yeah, the content before then, because they're paying to support you and it's on, really. People do Patreon in different ways, though, in different ways and stuff. Yeah, I absolutely love it, but it's a big priority of mine now, because I see it as kind of my little take-home pay. They help me pay the bills so I can keep doing what I do. Thank you so much, my beautiful patrons, and thank you everyone else, by the way, who supports me. You don't have to become a patron, still be a marshmallow and part of the Catnip family, and I always try and engage with the community regardless. I don't know what I'm trying to say now. Don't worry about rushing me off. I'm ready to answer the question here for you. I'm buzzing now. I've got a high. I probably won't be. My studio vlog's going to be late because of you right now.
Because one of the biggest things that I said to Catherine, because I asked Catherine to do this podcast last year in I think it was September or something, and then you were going away to Florida, so we had to, like, reschedule it.
Yeah, it was really bad timing. Florida and Christmas. Don't ever book a holiday during the busy time of year. I'm not going to be doing that again.
Yeah, it was it was not a fun time. I mean, it was. It was a fun challenge. But no, I just...
Your first Christmas on the job as well.
Yeah, it was.
We kind of throw you in at the deep end. Here you go, Mike.
To be honest, it wasn't, the Christmas wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, but that's because when you and Emily were talking about, like, how busy Christmas was, I was thinking back to the job that I did before that, which was photoshopping Christmas cards for a company, where I'd scan them in and take out scan lines and things from the scanner using Photoshop, and we used to have boxes piled high right up to the roof, and I was kind of like, when you and Emily were talking about it, I was kind of thinking, like, oh my god, we're gonna have orders stacked up to the roof. But it was busy, but it wasn't too busy, but it was fun.
it's just one of those things. I think the Christmas before, though, was because that's when the studio vlog went viral, and I didn't have any help at that point, so I had to put Emily in to help me, and that was mental. We were like, what are we doing? But then we got a system going. It's a lot more smooth now, so it's a bit more routine, and yeah, runs smoothly.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll have plenty of questions, and I think it might be, I don't know if you're up for it, it might be because you were talking about doing possibly Etsy reviews. Maybe me and you could do one quick one right now for somebody. Maybe, I don't know.
I'd rather do that and spend an Etsy critique, you mean. I would rather spend down with my pad and paper and really try and give some constructive feedback. I don't think it's one of those. Sorry, I don't think it's one of those things you could put a page and go, I'd like to take, like, extensive notes, give my...
I didn't think about that, actually. I suppose, because obviously I do Twitch channel reviews and things where I'll review the branding and the graphics and some of the content, but that's just one web page. I suppose when you're looking at an Etsy store, you're looking at, like, thousands of different products and listings and the way that they're brought. Yeah. Okay, maybe not. Maybe that was a bad idea. I was on the spot. Look, I tried. I just wanted to help.
You tried. 10 out of 10 for trying.
But I think it would be helpful. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Catherine. Why don't you go ahead, shout out your link, shout out anything that you want to, and then we'll go ahead and move on to the questions.
Yes. So my links are just at catnip, spelled K-A-T-N-I-P, or illustration, because I couldn't take illustration. But yeah, it's just catnip. If you type in catnip, K-A-T-N-I-P.
Okay, everybody, that is a wrap for episode number 28 of the podcast. Thank you all for listening. Super, super appreciate it. Big shout out to a wonderful friend of mine. I don't know if she's going to hear this, but a huge shout out to a wonderful friend of mine. Don't rage quit. If you are listening to this, Rach, I just want you to know that you are a hugely profound influence on myself. I absolutely love your content. I love everything that you do. And not only that, she is also an avid listener of this podcast, and she reaches out quite often with feedback and comments, and when things just bug up on her end and it doesn't seem to happen anywhere else. But don't worry, Rach, because we all still love you here on the Mike James Content Experience Podcast, and everybody else that listens to this podcast. I appreciate you so much. We get about 20 average plays within the first 24 hours. So for those of you that play this episode as soon as it comes out, huge love for you, huge respect. Please reach out and let me know who you are on Twitter at It's the Mike James. Please let me know your comments about the podcast, because I'm always looking to improve, and I'm also looking to start hopefully getting some sponsors for this podcast, and you guys are going to make that happen by simply just sharing the podcast and just telling all your friends about it, and just pass it on to anybody that's looking to become a successful content creator. And let me know how I can change my questions if you don't think you're learning enough from this podcast. I really want everybody to come away from every episode learning one new thing about something, and that's my goal for this podcast. So thank you guys for listening. I hope you all have a wonderful week, and I will see you guys again next week. Goodbye.